My father, Terry Clements, was a press officer for BMC in the 1960s. He has a passion for Wolseley motor cars. The following is an essay he wrote in 1963 on the resurrection of the Wolseley gyrocar. When the genius of an eccentric Russian aristocrat met with the skill of British craftsmen, something unusual was bound to result. That something was the world's first, and to date only, successful two-wheeled automobile. It was in the fall of 1912 that His Excellency Count Peter Shklovsky, a lawyer and member of the Russian royal family, commissioned the Wolseley Tool and Motor Car Company to produce a two-wheeled gyroscopic car to his own design. Such a vehicle, the Count claimed, would have immense military value in that it would be able to travel across terrain too difficult for conventional transport. Furthermore, he said, his gyrocar would be able to reach a higher speed with a lighter body and less powerful engine than a comparable four-wheeled and exaggerated claim that was not in fact proved. The plans that the tubby, impeccably dressed Russian unfurled in front of the Wolseley engineers showed a cumbersome, six-seat open body slung between two wheels in tandem, as in an ordinary bicycle. Between the front and central seats was a locker housing Shklovsky's painted stabiliser, a gyro harnessed to an ingenious collection of pendulums, racks, pinions, and two pieces of frail-looking sash cord. Notive power was to be supplied by a contemporary Wolseley Vickers car engine mounted ahead of the radiator and driving the rear wheel through a normal clutch and gearbox. A solitary transmission brake on the tail of the gearbox provided stopping power. Evidently, the Count must have impressed the Wolseley engineers, for his strange order was accepted. Money could hardly have been the reason for the company, which nestled under the protective wing of the great Vickers armament combine, was far from bankrupt at that time. Prestige can also be discounted, for Wolseley cars were to be found in the coach houses of many of the crowned heads of Europe, and the firm's products had an envied reputation for quality and longevity. One must assume that the bearded lawyer-turned-inventor must have possessed great tact and personal charm in addition to a thorough knowledge of automobiles. Work began at once and went ahead on a trial-and-error basis. Throughout the year that it took to build the chassis and running gear, the Count was a frequent visitor to the experimental department of the Birmingham factory and, although he would never allow his aristocratic hands to touch a spanner or screwdriver, he proved an efficient, if eccentric, foreman. On at least one occasion, he declared a half-day holiday at his own expense for all members of the department, while on other occasions, he would play the benevolent uncle by throwing one of his immaculate gloves into a crowd of apprentices and rewarding the youth who returned it to him with a half-sovereign. Eventually, the chassis was ready and the whole works turned out to see it make its first run. This is the report of the test engineer who drove it. On November the 27th, 1913, I made an effort to move the car, which was successful, no derangement of the governing gear taking place. We drove the car backwards and forwards for a distance of about 6 feet many times. During these tests, it was noticeable that one could stand on the side of the car and step into the body without any disturbance of balance. We then moved the car partially round a radius to the left, backwards and forwards. Eventually, we drove the car the whole length of the works backwards and forwards with four passengers. Then His Excellency decided to take the machine over on the track, impressing on me that we must go very gently. We drove into the Arden Road, making two stops on the curve, and we had to reverse so that we should not use full lock. I then drove the car steadily up the Arden Road, going as slowly as possible and slipping the clutch in first gear all the time. We took a wide sweep into the Bordesley Green Road and suddenly the vehicle heeled to the near side and dropped onto its sprag. It was lifted by eight men, the engine restarted and the car driven back to the experimental department, but it was supported by outside assistance as His Excellency did not attempt to balance the car in the street. The next few months were busily occupied in sorting out teething troubles, building a body and fitting it to the chassis and in reworking the front suspension and steering gear to improve the car's cornering ability. Then, on April the 28th, 1914, the Wolseley gyrocar was given its first public demonstration in front of a large and interested crowd in Regent's Park, London. Throughout the next few weeks, the car was a familiar sight in the more fashionable streets of England's capital as the Count was chauffeured to and from parties and technical gatherings. As befitted a man of noble birth, he was always driven by an engineer on loan from Wolseley's, and he never himself took the wheel in public. Satisfied with his achievement, Count Shklovsky paid off the company and made arrangements to ship the car to Russia, where he intended to use it on his estates and also demonstrate its military possibilities to the government. but the First World War intervened and he hurriedly returned home alone. The gyrocar lay neglected and rusting in a corner of the factory throughout the war, and for some time after, until the directors of the company assumed that the inventor had been killed in action or murdered in the Russian Revolution. Nevertheless, as long as there was the remotest possibility of the Count being alive, they could not dispose of what they considered was a white elephant. Therefore, the car was buried. It was quickly forgotten. In the early 20s, there were more pressing problems to consider than the fate of a crank Russian. The company, whose quality-built autos were used by royalty, was badly hit by the recession in the motor and steel industries and, like so many other well-known firms, it was bankrupt. The owners, the Vickers organisation, sold Wolseley's to Lord Nuffield, whose bullnose Morris cars had become a household word. Then, in 1938, nearly 20 years after its interment, someone remembered the gyrocar and decided that after all it could be given some value, if only as a curiosity. The order was given for the strange vehicle literally to be resurrected from its grave. This was done. Even the area where the car lay buried and had been turned into a railway goods yard and trains ran regularly over it remains. Many pounds were spent on the restoration of the gyrocar and, although it never took again to the road, it was accorded a place of honour in the company museum. According to factory rumour, unsubstantiated, the Count reappeared again shortly after that. An old man, living in exile and deprived of his estates and income, he is supposed to have visited the factory one day to see his invention. Then he disappeared again, this time for good. The gyrocar survived the Second World War, emerging unscathed from the heavy air raids that damaged the factory in 1940. But with the coming of peace, the words white elephant were again uttered and the long and eventful life of the strangest vehicle ever produced came to an undignified end in 1948 when the unique Wolseley gyrocar was broken up for scrap.